All right. I'm going to call the meeting of July 9th. We'll start and up our Heritage Council to order. First thing on the agenda is to approve the agenda, which is in front of you. I'd like to make one recommended deletion, which is the under item 5, we really have nothing to talk about in terms of the conflict plan, the recommendation bills at this time. So if it's all right with you, we won't talk about it. But with that, I'd like for a motion for approval.
Sure, I'll move to approve.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Any conflicts of interest on today's agenda? Hard to imagine, but we will ask. No conflicts of interest. Number 4, accomplishment plan request. You have in front of you a memo regarding an adjustment to an accomplishment plan. We have representatives from the Nature Conservancy here who will come up and explain this to us. Good. And for the record, introduce yourselves on the mic so the team knows who you are.
Good morning, and thank you for having us here. My name is Rich Johnson. I'm with the Nature Conservancy. I've been with them for about 10 years, and I'm the program manager for the Northern Tall Grass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge Land Acquisition Project. So I'm just going to talk briefly this morning about that project, give you a little bit of context, and then I'm going to talk about specifically cluster management plans this morning. So, Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge was established in 1999 by the Fish and Wildlife Service to protect remnants of the prairie across the western part of the state. And over the 15 years or so of that project, they protected about 5,000 acres of grassland and wetland through fee acquisition and easement acquisition across about 15 counties in western Minnesota. The particular piece that the Nature Conservancy is involved with is a new program funded through the council. We're in the first phase of a multi-year project to enhance and speed up that effort. As we know, conversion is going on, and still there's a need to do this work. And just to kind of let you know, it was a project that took a while to kind of pick up momentum. That's probably not surprising, but it involved a lot of different parties here. A federal agency, we had a non-governmental group like the Nature Conservancy, Department of Natural Resources. There were a lot of moving pieces and details. So sort of the last piece of approval from Washington came through late last year. And it's been nice to see it pick up speed since then. The first property in that project closed in March of 2013. We've done 4 projects in 4 months since then with about 560 acres of protection. And about 400 of that was native prairie, which really was the mission and the target of that work. So we do want to thank our partners on the council staff and the Department of Natural Resources for working through that process with us. And now that it's sort of come up to speed, we're excited about the opportunity. There's just a lot of really good work to be done out there. At this point, I would turn things over to my colleague to talk about this specific request.
Hi, my name is Linda Borman. I am with the Conservancy, and I do land protection work and am doing purchases of conservation easements and fee purchases for the Northern Tallgrass Prairie for the Fish and Wildlife Service. Sandy, we have given you some maps. Are they distributed to everyone? So we'll be referring to that. We have a your photo and some regular photos for you all to refer to as I go through this. Just wanted to orient you to the site. We're seeking approval to purchase a conservation easement with a State Holland Dam easement in place on it. So the property in question is outlined in yellow. It's called Polk County Number 2. About half of the property is subject to the dam easement, and the dam easement area is outlined with a dashed black line, and you can see that the location of the dam is indicated on the air photo. And if you look down at the photo on the bottom of the page on the left hand side, you can see a picture of the dam. It's quite small dam. It's used for letting out water
to enhance the habitat on the north of WMA. So again, looking at the air photo on the top of the page, the Nora WMA, owned by DNR, is to the east of this property. There's a large wetland on it, and you can see the wetland extends onto the Polk County number 2 property, and then it goes through the dam. Above Polk County number 2 property, there's a property that is outlined in blue called Polk County number 3. That's another easement project that we're working on. And if you take a look at number 3 and number 2, you can see that the area that's kind of a lighter green is native prairie, and it is a complex that goes across both of the properties, so it's one big prairie. And looking down at the photo on the left-hand side, you'll see a hillside. That's the native prairie that we're wanting to protect. And the property is kind of divided kind of at the top of the hillside between those two properties. Being successful in getting an easement on the property number 3 is dependent on getting approval from y'all today on the property number 2. The dam easement is one for construction and maintenance. It was put on the property in 1967, so it's a fairly old dam. It allows them to maintain the dam. It is not a conservation easement, so there is no habitat protection involved with this. So putting a Fish and Wildlife Service habitat easement is going to be protecting the native prairie. It's going to prevent any plowing or building on the property. It also will help to protect the wetland that is on the property. Our goal with these easements is to protect the remaining native prairie. This property and the one to the north of it fits the bill. This one has about 24 acres of Minnesota County Biological Survey identified native prairie on it. It has about 16 acres of wetland and 500 meters of water frontage. It's a tributary to the Chippewa River. Property number 3 has about 54 acres of Minnesota County Biological Survey identified native prairie and wetlands on it. There's another conservation easement that is potential nearby here. So you can see one of the goals that we have is to kind of build out from existing protected properties and try to add on to those so that you have a large quantity of protected area in one spot. So this will help to extend the Nora WMA and the protected area and the buffers around it. We have a signed option on the property, both of these properties, number 2 and number 3. We've talked with the DNR and Fish and Wildlife Service staff, and they don't have any problem with putting a habitat easement on top of the property that has the dam easement. The photo on the right-hand side is just a little bit closer view, kind of showing you the diversity of plants and on the property. So this is really kind of indicative of native prairie. Just wanted to show you and the fact that it's a really unusual landform in that area. I was out there a couple of weeks ago, and you're in the middle of farm country, and here's a beautiful protected area right in the middle of it, native prairie. And that's where we're seeing things. This property is a hilly property, and so it wasn't really suited to agricultural use, and that's why it's still native prairie. If you like that, it is converted to agricultural use. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have, and thank you again for letting us come and speak today.
I had just a few questions. Is the state dam easement a perpetual easement?
Yes.
And would this proposed easement trump the other, or are they? Does one have jurisdiction or precedence over the other?
I guess I can't answer that. The dam easement is in place. It is perpetual. But I learned by talking with the Fish and Wildlife Service and DNR folks in that area, they have a great working relationship with each other, which is why they don't have a problem with putting one easement on top of the other. They will work with each other to make sure that they
is the ownership for the county? Who owns it?
DNR. So
DNR
state,
owns it?
The state owns it.
Owns the dam.
Owns the dam, that's correct.
Who owns the property?
Oh, land, individual landowner.
Okay.
Private
landowner. And what would the cost be? I would hope that it would be much lower than what was familiar with purchasing easements.
The cost of the project was $92,800. That's arrived at by a formula that is used by Fish and Wildlife Service when they enter into easements. So the standard, their standard formula for determining easement value.
I have probably an easy question. The written materials we have refer to Polk County number 1, but the map says Polk County number 2. Is that just a typo?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
And these numbers match up with the project list submitted.
I think this is project number 1 on overall in Polk County, but this is the 2.
Okay.
I did the same thing. If you look in the upper left-hand side, there's a building there that looks like a 1. Just assume the whole thing is 1. Jim?
Yeah, I'm curious. The property borders this NORA WMA. The state has a dam on that end of that well, and why wouldn't the state just buy that property and add it to the NORA WMA?
They could have approached the landowners to do that. The landowners chose to work with Fish and Wildlife Service. I don't know the history of that.
Right.
And then selling their property, they wanted to do a conservation easement. And Fish and Wildlife Service has a very robust easement program. DNR does not. They have native prairie bank easement, but it doesn't. It covers the native prairie portion of the property, maybe a little bit more than that. The Fish and Wildlife Service is taking in more.
Rick?
My question is on the dam maintenance or replacement. And if you're placing the conservation easement on the property as it is now, and the dam was built in 1967, and it fails at some point in time, does the conservation easement require that the dam be built back to the condition as it is when the conservation easement was placed on it? Or is there any other impediment on maintenance or replacement? Is it in the conservation easement? Is there anything citing maintenance or replacement?
The conservation easement says there will not be any ditching, draining, and dredging, and so forth. And so, but it says unless approved in writing. So there would be conversations between DNR and Fish and Wildlife Service to determine what's going to happen there.
Follow up on that. So the request would come on that for ditching or draining from landowners or adjacent landowners or between the two agencies?
I guess I can't specifically answer that question. Again, just letting you know that the Fish and Wildlife Service and DNR work really closely together, and so I know that there would be conversations between the two about what's going to happen. I can also add, you know, if you look at the map, and what we're trying to protect is native prairie here. The native prairie is very high, and you see the dam is at the bottom of the hill. So the construction that they would be doing if they start to do any changes on the dam would not be really affecting the native prairie because it's just all on the high ground.
And Rick, I think an answer that because the state has an existing easement on the dam and the ability to maintain it, it would, if the dam were to fail, the state could go in and repair that dam because of that easement in place, and this would be subject to that easement.
And that's my concern, that let's say 30 years from now we're all gone and something happens, the dam fails, or 50 years from now we're all gone. And the dam fails.
100 years.
And has two easements, and we don't want to have something preclude action, either requiring it to not be maintained or requiring it to go farther. Could you sooner or later something will have to be done with it now. And unintended consequences with precedent of the older easement, the newer, or which, and I don't know if Janelle has any counsel. I think maybe having this discussion is that we don't want to have something, but we can't do that because that this easement takes precedence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. An opinion.
Yeah, thrown on the lawyer hat. Sorry. When you take the second easement for the conservation easement, you take it subject to the first easement. So the first easement has still the rights that it always had. The second easement would be slightly adjusted to the rights it would otherwise have. So you would always have the right to go in and fix the dam.
Sure. Just, and Linda knows details better than I do, but the original dam easement doesn't require them to maintain it. They can choose to let it go. And the easement, the conservation easement, doesn't specifically address the issue that the first easement is sitting there. So. But the dam is specifically designed for water level management on the WMA. So DNR is managing it for that, and there's been very good conservation practice. We assume that we continue to manage it just for that, or remove it but not doing the other alterations.
Thank you. My question is regards my confusion on parcel number 2 and parcel number 3. We are referring to the easement on parcel number 2 only, or is that 92,800 easement dollars include parcel number 3, or is parcel number 3 in the future plan? How do parcel number 2 and 3 fit in?
The $92,800 is for the purchase of a conservation easement. We have signed options on both of these properties. The access to parcel number 3 goes across parcel number 2. The landowners, parcel number 2 landowners, do not want to grant that access easement unless they do an easement on their property. So protecting that the 54 acres main prairie and wetland on parcel number 3 depends on getting approval of parcel number 2. Does that answer your question?
Yes. A follow-up, please. So there has been preliminary talk about parcel number 3, and is the Nature Conservancy in a position to go ahead, and is it their desire to go ahead then? If this parcel number 2 is approved, to then work with the landowner to firm up the easement on parcel number 3?
It has gone even further than that. So we have a signed option. So as soon as if we get approval today for acquiring parcel number 2, we can exercise those options and purchase both of these.
Thank you.
Thank you. Am I to assume that hunting will be allowed on the two easements, or is that not part of it? Number 2 and eventually number 3, will bird hunting be allowed there, for example?
On conservation easements, access to the public is not part of the...
So the landowner still retains...
They retain ownership and
I'm curious, what was the price per acre? You already got a signed deal, so you can disclose it. And was it the same for both parcels?
It's slightly different between the two different parcels. The parcel number 2 allows haying after July 15th. Parcel number 3 allows grazing, so the formula is slightly different. The per acre on parcel number 2 is $16.58. And on parcel number 3 is $12.88.
Just to follow up, is the hay you said July 15th, and so it'll be hay every year at Minnesota. Grazing, that conservation grazing plan that anybody else has in there, it's just open to grazing by the farmer.
The grazing is after July 15th on parcel number two. I think the commission, they can choose to hay or not. They don't have to, but they can. And then the grazing is under a year.
Does someone like to make a motion? There is a motion in front of you that suggests.
Yes, I would like to make the motion as written under the handout that we have. I move to approve the acquisition of the Onsted property, Polk County number one, as described under ML 2010, Chapter 361, Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 2D. Okay.
She's suggesting that it be Polk County number two, since that's consistent with what's on the map.
Okay. Okay.
What's written here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is that all right with you?
Yes. Apologize.
Yes. I amend that to number two.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks for coming in today. Good luck getting it done. Next, we thought we ought to have a little discussion about our recommendation process going forward. Bill is not able to join us today. He has a family commitment. So Heather is my left-hand person today. Do you want to take us through the three parts of scoring, hearing, allocation for the new members, and so we can talk about that and getting the questions on the table. We've all received the big book. Hopefully you've had a chance to start flying through it. If you're like me, the first few that you do, you end up going back to because you realize that how you're doing it consistently isn't the same done. So it takes some time to get through that. But it does give you a great understanding of the project in front of us. So, Heather, if you could just take us through this.
Yeah, for the, thank you, you've each received a booklet, not exactly a booklet, a large book full of 55 proposals from a variety of different entities, many of which you've seen before in previous versions, and some new proposals as well. So the first step of the process is to read each proposal and score it individually against the criteria that has been provided. Jane Kingston graciously helped us think through the scoring criteria. We made some adjustments to those better defined parameters, what the criteria included, and I think that has proved to be very helpful for us, certainly staff, and I hope so for members as well. So as you read through each proposal, it's really important to remember that you're looking at the proposals individually at this stage and not against other proposals. So you're taking the proposals as a proposal, looking at the criteria, and assessing them to that extent. That's the first step of the process. We'll reconvene then in August, on August 1st, bring back, in the interim, you'll have sent in your individual scoring sheets. Staff will take the time to collate all that information and provide you with a number of different data points, ways in which you can analyze the scores and such. If you have any suggestions of ways in which you'd like to see that material, please let us know in the next couple of weeks as the scores come in. I think they're due July 18th. We'll have a pretty short period of time to turn that around. So again, if you have any suggestions on ways in which you'd like to see it, please let us know as soon as you can. August 1st, then, we'll reconvene. We'll have the data to look at. We'll have a better understanding of how the proposals stand up individually, and also we'll start then to see how they stand up against one another. At that time, then, the council will make recommendations as to which proposals they'd like to hear, and those we'll just get those scheduled for early September. Depending upon the number of proposals that the council wishes to hear, we'll determine the number of days in which we sit in this room and review those proposals. Tentatively, we have 4 days set aside the first 2 weeks in September to do so. After the September meeting,
let me just make sure. we have, in the past, which is subject to everyone's agreement, but we have chosen to run very long days instead of adding extra days. So I think you can, you should plan on at least the first 2 days being here after dinner. And we'll just run right through dinner unless everybody really wants to come for 4 full days and such. So just for the new members, the history is that we run long instead of running multiple days where we can.
And typically those proposal hearings have been in 20 to 30 minute increments and will most likely stay with that. So the report is really... it's really a task for people to come in and really to convey additional information within that 20-minute time, 20 to 30-minute time, as well as any questions that the council members might have. But our experience has been, they've been very good at doing that, so that should not be an issue. We come back then on the 16th after we've done the hearings and determined the allocations. And at that meeting, typically in the past, there's been a chair's proposal that starts the conversation. That, of course, is subject to change as well, given council members' preference. But with the chair's proposal, we begin the allocation process, and that should be completed by the end of the meeting on September 16th.
The 16th isn't the meeting?
I'm sorry, September 20th.
Okay.
Excuse me, yes. Once September 20th then has concluded, we will have a good understanding of what proposals will be going forward, and staff will spend the rest of the fall putting the bill together, accomplishment plan that will be due in October, and be ready to go in January of 2014.
So the one thing I would say is it's incredibly helpful as you're scoring these, when you have questions or comments or thoughts, to write those down on the sheet that you're going to send in to staff so that those comments are shared with everyone, so everyone gets the benefit of your collective our collective knowledge and perspective. And perspectives are fine. It doesn't have to be, I love this, I hate this, but really, I don't understand this, or I wish there was more information on that, or this doesn't fit, or whatever it is that you're thinking when you're reading it. If you can share that, it's a lot easier than all of us then taking time to do that in a meeting. And you'll see there's some commonality that will happen there. But I would encourage you to not just score, but to also share your comments. So that's the process we have in front of us. Any questions, comments?
And this is... not necessarily documented, it's kind of an opinion I have, that when members, and I probably did it too early on, is they look at the proposals and they've kind of made up in their mind what areas they think are the most endangered habitats. We'll just say that you think wetlands are the most endangered habitat in the state. So when you score a forestry project, you might score that forestry project lower because you think that wetlands are the most important thing in the state. And I just want to try to get members to always, if you give a project a high score because it meets all the criteria for that ecoregion, it does not require that you give it an allocation, okay? And so you have to score the project based on the merit, not on based on where you think you're going to allocate your funds. So score each project, and if you still think wetlands are it, you might not fund any forestry projects, but you don't score them low because they're, or lower because they're lower on your priority list. You score them accurately based on their merits, and then you can still choose to make an allocation to that ecoregion or that particular type of project when we allocate the money. And that, I think, when I take a look at and I see a project and it gets 10 members that score an 8 and 2 people that scored it a 30. Okay, to me, there's some disconnect there. Now there's obviously our scores are open for interpretation, and there's going to be some variation there. But if 10 people thought it was spectacular, and 2 people thought it was terrible, then something is normally amiss. So score the project on its merits, even if it will ultimately not give it an allocation of dollars. And I think that will mean there is only one criterion there, which is urgency. And that would be a small part of the score if you think that there is no urgency in that particular project. But I think that will give the project a more accurate score, even though that won't affect necessarily its ultimate appropriation.
Thank you. John?
Scott, I agree with you. I think that's a very good analysis of how we ought to be approaching the allocation, the allocations and that recommendation.
Any?
Can I just ask, can you give us some words as far as the projects that are in here twice, what your thoughts are and how that's going to work? It just seems like that's got a potential.
I think we have a discussion that we need to have when we get to the hearing. Who are we going to call in for hearings as to how we want to handle that? And certainly an allocation. I mean, my own preference, and this is just my preference, is we bifurcate those and deal with them as individual projects instead of as a package. But it's for the group to decide how we want to handle that. I think, and Jane and I had a discussion about this, what do we do going forward so we're not in that circumstance going forward? And I think there's a discussion in front of us, not today and not in the next couple meetings, but in the future, do we want to make it clear that projects should only appear once so that we don't have the confusion we have today? We have the projects now. I encourage everyone to score them as projects. When we get to the discussion on who are we going to call in for hearings, I think we have to have a discussion about how we want to handle that. Because I think it would be inappropriate for us to not score projects or decide it doesn't work this time. We didn't provide guidance in advance for that, but we certainly are likely to in the future.
Can I just a follow-up? It would be inappropriate to fund the project twice, basically, with funding it, to fully fund it in both. That would make for adverse allocations, wouldn't it? I mean,
it would
that
be,
opportunity
well,
is there, and is that not going to be... We should not do that. That's where my guess and the gist of my question is. Like, say I really like one of those projects that's listed twice, so I fully fund it as a group and then I fully fund it as an individual. How is that going to work?
Well, when we get to the allocation process, you know, as we have done with other projects, we've said, you know, accomplishment one, we want to fund, and accomplishment two, we don't want to fund within a project. And we are undoubtedly going to have a discussion about how we allocate to components of not just the one that they're duplicates, but other projects. Because we've got $250 million worth of requests for $100 million. We're going to, even for the best projects, are probably not going to get all their money. And we're going to have to pick and choose, do we like the work over here or the work over there as we move through this. So we're going to have to do that with the duplicative stuff, and clearly there's no way we're going to agree to fund something twice.
But in the allocation process, if I fully fund it twice, isn't going to wait? How's that?
That's why we're going to have the discussion before we do allocation, I think, about how we want to handle that. I think the scoring after hearings, or the discussion about who we're going to hear from, and then the allocation, you know, my recommendation would be that we split it apart, because it's impossible to not run into the problem you're talking about. But the group will have to talk about that. But when we get to the allocation, you know, we would, assuming we didn't do that, I think there'd be enough of us who would say there's no way we're going to fund something twice. Jim?
Thanks, David. I agree with Representative McNamara. I think we should deal with it right now, David, because it's going to skew the whole process. If somebody's allocating to both the group project and the individual project, that money, if there was only one, would have gone someplace else. So it's going to skew the whole curve. Why not deal with it now? Why bring it forward any further than today because we're going to have to judge them and score them right now. Why not deal with it right now?
Well, we can. I argue that the scoring process is separate from the allocation process. And, you know, there are three parts of this we have to do. One is just the scoring, which is who are we going to listen to? Who are we going to listen to? Or are we going to listen to them all? Are we going to listen to some group? The second is, what do we then recommend in terms of the funding individually? You're all going to have $100 million to divide up among all of these projects, and which ones do you want to fund? Is going to be something we each do individually, and then as a group we look at as a recommendation. And the third part is the horse trading that goes you know, Tom likes this one better than that one, and he wants more money, and, you know, give this one less, and all of that. We can, I don't think we have any choice but to hear, to score what is in front of us, because we can't ask anybody to submit differently at this point and get it done. I do think we can. There just isn't enough time. I do think we, when we get to the hearing process, can make a decision for how we want to handle that. And if you want to handle how we want to deal with it in the hearing process today, that's fine.
Oh, I disagree. I mean, I don't know why we can't deal with it today. It's an either or. They can do it individually, or they can leave the group project. It's one or the other. They don't have to do any work. Just one of them is going to get subtracted. And that's just going to confuse the issue. When someone looks at the individual projects, some of them are going to be scored higher, some are going to be lower. Then you get them over here in a group, and it might be an entirely different scoring. So it's just going to confuse the issue. Why bring it any farther forward? We're going to have to deal with it sooner or later. Let's do it now and make it clear and concise. There's nothing they have to do except make a decision. We want to put them forward this way, or we want to put them forward this way.
And I agree. I actually have two possible solutions. One would be to just notify those proposers and give them 3 business days and say, do you want to submit your application individually, or do you want to remove it as an individual project and submit it under the group? That's option one. Give them 3 days. We're not done scoring. Okay, they can come back and tell us what they want to do. The other option, which I think also can work, is we score those projects individually, okay, and then there is a weighted average, okay, based on the size of the project and the score you gave each project. It's just a formula, a weighted average, that puts a number, a score, in the big group project. So that way, those two are guaranteed to come out identical. Okay, you take and score individually, or you take, and then you take a weighted average of that and you put it under the big ask. Okay, so you have those two choices. They either decide we're going to go individual or we're going to go in the group, and that's pretty easy. We get an email out in 3 days that says these projects are standalone. Number 6 includes these. Okay, or we score them individually and then use a weighted formula to put the number in the other, so that the weighting is the same.
Rick?
Well, let's, just so Minnesotans are clear what we're talking about here, we're talking about the veto projects that were the issue of intense controversy. I think if you change the rules in the middle of the game, you can't get this whole proposal from now on. You're treating proposals, whatever Scott or Jim are talking about, is changing and treating them differently than the other proposals. And you poison the whole project, the whole batch.
Jane?
My understanding is that the individuals are not verbatim as they stand individually in the HRE 05. So if they're not identical in their entirety in HRE 05, you can't do that weighted average thing because they're not the same. And I agree about changing the rules. I think that it's more work for the council to go through them all and look at them individually, and that's what we're supposed to do anyway, that you look at every project individually, and then you score them, and then we have the discussion on what we want to hear. and there won't be double, there will be no double dipping, and we're going to have to deal with that in the allocation process.
With the work I do with contract, we frequently look backwards and go, oh my God, why didn't we do it that way? We didn't do it that way. We didn't give the instructions when the call for proposals went out and said you can only ask for money on the same project once. Next year we should do that. This year we didn't. We do need to, from a procedural standpoint, even though it's more work, score all of them individually and in their group. I don't think there's a way around it, and I don't think we should take a way around it because that's our oops looking backwards of we should have done it differently. As far as the allocation process and the hearing process, I think we decide what we want to do and how we want to handle that on August 1st when we meet to review the member rankings and select requests for hearing. At that point, I think there should be a communication to the ones that submitted twice. Do you want to do it twice, or do you want to do one lump, or do you want to do just individuals and then let them decide how they want to do the presentation piece? But from a scoring point, it's too late, we screwed up, we just have to do the work. And that's my opinion.
Jim? Well, David, it's my understanding that the staff told them not to do it as a group. I understand you told them not to do it as a group. I had discussions with them, I told them not to do it as a group. I think Jane had discussions, told them not to do it as a group. So either they don't understand English, or I'm not quite sure. And I guess I would ask the question of Representative Hansen, what's the purpose of doing it two ways? I mean, why would anybody do it two ways?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, I'm really concerned about members telling people what to do. This is supposed to be an open process where a request for proposals can bring... they can bring in the project. So you telling them not to do something means you're prejudging what they're bringing forward before you even see it.
I did not tell anyone. I did recommend. I did not tell anyone what they could do.
But we just had on the record council members telling people not to do things.
And I'm saying
the purpose for things is we had a request for proposal that did not preclude people putting in multiple projects. And the aggregate project is are the vetoed projects, which there was a letter that the governor said resubmit them. So they did. So you have the aggregate and you have the individual projects, which are pieces of this. So for Minnesotans to have an open and fair process, you need to say what you're going to do and do what you're going to say. So we told them we have a request for proposals to come in. They submitted them. Now we have to evaluate them on their merit, like Senator Saxon said, make those decisions, and then when we allocate, we have to make those decisions.
Jim? I think you should have used the word recommend that they didn't do it that way. But you didn't answer my question. What's the purpose? And the other thing is we can set our own process, Representative Hansen. Nobody else sets the process. We determine our own process and how we're going to do things here. And there's no reason for somebody to bring in multiple projects unless they're trying to game the system. Now, they can do it either way. They can do it as a group or they can do it individually. But if they bring them in together, it's going to skew our whole system because there's going to be money allocated to projects twice that would have normally gone to other projects. So it's going to skew the process that we've used up to this point.
Elizabeth?
Okay. I think for me it was a little bit confusing, and what I was going to do is pull out the projects that I already had scored and then score the rest, but I don't think that that's right either. There is some built-in... there's some criteria in which a large group of projects that go across multiple areas and multiple conservation plans and multiple will score higher. And when you do that, like group a bunch of projects, you're going to end up with a little bit higher score in a couple of the criteria. It's just going to be automatic. So it is to a certain degree weighted by having a bunch of projects of diverse nature into one proposal. And I understand that. But I don't think we can change the game at this point in time. I think that they are what they are. We have them in our binder. We're supposed to submit by the 18th, and I do believe that we need to do the best that we can scoring them under the criteria that we have at present time, and then make it very clear next year what we want, rather than try to second guess. I think we can only get in trouble second guessing.
Danny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cox, I think that we will have a discussion after we rank them to clarify how we're not going to double allocate the positive. I think we probably all agree we can't do that, and you make a good point that that would be an unfortunate way. I've been one, and in my notes, when a project, say, is for $2 million or something, I remember one, it was Pool 3, I think, where they run, and I said we should do the island building, and I allocated the amount of the request for the island building, which was a percentage of the total, and I made in my notes. I believe that's the part of the project we should fund. So, I mean, we've kind of done that already where we pick and choose, and I agree we do need to clarify in the future. There's probably not a good way to have them come in place, but I think we can do it. And then that was me forgetting. I knew we did a two-step process and for a second forgot, but we were doing it all in one. That's right. I think we should really honor the process. And as Representative Hansen said, this is one we got to be sure that we're getting a second regroup here. And we just need to regroup in a fair way, and I think we can.
Jane?
Well, I just want to point out that that's not the only repeat application. In this round or in previous rounds, there have been numerous repeat applications. Didn't have the kind of brouhaha that went along with this one, but you'll find some that are in this group that were applied and funded or not funded in the first and second round and the third and the fourth round. So, you know, if you want to go back and look at what happened with other previous projects, it's on the website and it's good information. Mistinka, I think, has applied 3 times. I mean, that's just one example. There are several. And some of them are titled differently, but the content is actually the same as previous projects. So you really have to read very, very carefully. And I'm not saying that whatever happened to them in the previous round should rule, but it's just more information for you if you want to look for it. So it doesn't matter if people are encouraged to apply or not. It's out there as a process, and they did. So we have to go through the process.
Scott?
And I agree with you, Jane, that there are people that have applied, were unsuccessful, applied again, might have got funded. But we've never had the same project in the same year's round of funding submitted twice. Okay? So that's a completely different issue than what's talking about here.
I agree.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments? We will learn from this experience. Next, we had a planned tour today, and it became impossible to do everything that we were going to do. So we're not stopping at Theater Works, doing a drive-by at Theater Works Park. And instead, we were going to have a presentation on the seven-county habitat, generally by Arnie on the bus, and as we went through Theater Worth, and because he's not getting that chance, we're asking him to make that presentation today so that we can be sure. So Arnie, thanks for coming in and changing your schedule.
Chair, members of the council, thank you very much. My name is Arnie Stepford, and I'm the manager and regional part of the SAPS program at the Metropolitan Council. And in your packet, I have a handout that I'm going to be referring to. That it's an overview of wildlife and fishery habitat in the Metropolitan Regional Park System. This is a fold-out that includes a map of the Metropolitan area.
We did not get that.
You did not get that.
It's in your bus packet.
Okay. Well, fortunately, I'll be doing this instead. The point is that under the Metro Regional Parks Act of 1974, the Metro Council, are we going to use the overhead screen? Okay. the Metro Council is directed to identify lands which should be acquired for a system of regional recreation open space, propose the special park district, county, and city facilities, which together with state facilities, and I must emphasize, which together with state facilities, reasonably meet outdoor recreation needs of the metropolitan area. And regional recreation open space is defined as land and water areas and facilities determined by the Metro Council to be of regional importance to provide a balanced system of public outdoor recreation for the metro area, including but not limited to park reserves, major linear parks and trails, large recreation parks, conservatories, zoos, and other special facilities. Now, in this handout, you have this pie chart, and it illustrates the fishery and wildlife habitat in the metro regional park system as a segment of the lands that are there. And it includes lakes that are surrounded by parks, because that's our fishery habitat. But essentially, we have half of that land area and water area is fishery and wildlife habitat that's actively managed for that purpose. Our park reserves, and there are 12 of them, you're going to see the 13th today on the tour at Blakely Bluffs. 80% of those lands are specifically to be managed for wildlife habitat purposes. They represent the landscape types pre-European settlement in this metropolitan area, and because we have this convergence between the hardwood forest and the Anoka sand plain and the prairie, you have this variety of habitat types here in the metropolitan region. So this map illustrates all of those parks in the context of other wildlife habitat lands. And we've got acreage there based upon GIS data, and zooming in on northern Anoka County, you see the Carlos Avery Wildlife Management Area there, a very large area of 12,000 plus acres. And then next door to that is Martin Island Linwood Lakes Regional Park, which is right there. We want to show you the physical locations of these parks in relationship to state lands and federal lands. So that's what this map will provide for you. Then moving over to the back page, when you look at all of the state lands and federal lands that are wildlife habitat, and then you add the regional park lands, you have 90 plus thousand acres total. And 35% of that is in the Metropolitan Regional Park System. So we are a partner with state and federal entities and the nonprofit organizations to actively manage wildlife habitat and fisheries habitat in the metropolitan area. And you're going to see examples of that this afternoon and today, I should say, in suburban Hennepin County, Carver Park Reserve, and Pro-Hatton Park Reserve, plus in Scott County at Blakely Bluffs, a new park reserve next door to wildlife management area there, in Dakota County at the Vermilion Highlands Complex, which is a 4,000-plus acre area, including a regional park, Whitetail Woods Regional Park, next door to the University of Minnesota's Umore Park and the DNR's Wildlife Management Area. All of that is actively managed and cooperatively managed by Dakota County, University of Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota. So that gets me down to this graphic. There is this partnership between these various players. You've got the Minnesota DNR Wildlife and Parks Division. You've got the Metro Regional Park Agencies. You've got U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Park Service, although they're not owners of any land. They partner with and help work with other government entities and nonprofit organizations. And the folks that I deal with specifically are 10 units of government that deal with these regional parks. They own and operate them. They're the counties of Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington, Three Rivers Park District, the cities of St. Paul and Bloomington, and the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. So that's my pitch and overview in part of, you're going to be seeing this relationship in various localities today on the tour. And be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions? Thank you, Ernie, for coming in and being flexible today.
Yes, my phone number is on in front of it, so please don't have to come and call me.
So, members, we're now going to get on the bus, which I assume is upstairs to the left, in front of the building, on the Capitol. You'll be happy to know that the rain is pretty much past us. If you go west, it's very light. It is very heavy right now, right here, but not for long. So we'll have a good trip.